India is on the moon. That's how ISRO director S. Somanath declared to the world when India became the first country in history to reach the lunar South Pole. The country hails the spectacular success of scientists who pulled off a flawless mission. Accolades are coming from across the world as Chandrayaan opens doorway to lunar explorations and future space missions. Hello everyone, you're watching Left, Right and Center. I'm Maria Shakil. On the show tonight, after the grand success of Mission Chandrayaan, the world now looks towards India. Former ISRO top bosses and experts will try and decode as to what role will India be playing in shaping the geopolitical order. We'll also have a special chat with the makers of popular web series Rocket Boys to discuss what does this conquering of the moon mean for the next generation of scientists and engineers. Also on the show tonight, BRICS Summit concludes in Johannesburg. The big highlight is the expansion of the five-member grouping to now 11, India being the prominent voice of the Global South. First, the good news. ISRO has put out a tweet detailing what Chandrayaan 3 is now up to. It said, all activities are on schedule, all systems are normal, and these are the first set of visuals of the lunar surface that was captured by the Vikram lander before the touchdown. Chandrayaan 3, remember, was built and launched at an estimated budget of $75 million in comparison to Luna 25, which crashed while trying to reach the same area of the moon last week, took roughly around $200 million to build and launch. So it's being seen as a low-cost miracle as well. So what will Pragyan rover do on moon? So after rolling down a ramp from the Chandrayaan 3 lander, six-wheeled Pragyan rover will roam moon for 14 days. And the rover, remember, has a weight of roughly 26 kgs. And it will be carrying out chemical analysis of moon's surface, measure temperature, thermal conductivity, will measure lunar seismic activity as well. You know, Chandrayaan 3 certainly has put India in this elite orbit. It is a boost to perception of India as a rising power. There is global acceptance of India playing a major role in space missions. India has become the first nation to land on unexplored South Pole of Moon. It is only the fourth nation to achieve soft landing on Moon. It certainly is a big feat during BRICS Summit because Prime Minister is there and just ahead of the crucial G20 summit in New Delhi, and it will give that much-needed fillip to India's standing within BRICS and G20. And now, clearly, world is looking towards India as to what the Vikram actually captures and gets details of the knowledge of Moon. Before I bring in the guests, let me bring Pallav here in the studio, who is here with a rocket. So what do you have here? Let's, you know, shape it up or bring it up for the guests.
Well, if Chandrayaan is big and makes India into the big league and the elite club, the next big mission which India has, Gaganyaan, which is to launch an Indian astronaut from Indian soil on an Indian rocket. And this is a scaled model of the launch vehicle Mark III. And this is just come to me today as a gift from Indic Inspirations for Chandrayaan's success. And this is the rocket which India will use for launching Indian astronauts.
Okay, so when is that happening?
In the next couple of weeks, we'll start seeing the testing of this particular rocket. This is the crew module on top of it. This is the crew escape system, and this is the launch vehicle Mark III. The same rocket as which launched Chandrayaan 3. But now human rated. That means the reliability is much higher. Chandrayaan 3 launch vehicle Mark 3 was also very reliable, but this is even more reliable.
So this
particular mission to launch an Indian astronaut, there are about a dozen tests which have to happen. And Prime Minister Modi, remember, spoke about it when he was in Johannesburg. this will happen if everything goes well, end of 2024, end of early 2025, India can hope to send an Indian astronaut.
So we have
space.
A roadmap that is ready.
A roadmap is fully ready. Hmm. I personally was very keen that we send an Indian lady up. It was initially called a manned space flight.
I made it to human
space flight. I really want that an Indian fighter pilot
Absolutely.
Go up to the International Space Station on the joint mission by India and US, which is likely to happen in 2024. But I don't think that will happen.
Okay.
Some of my wishes never materialize. But here is the rocket which will carry Indian astronauts.
Okay.
So if Chandrayaan takes you to big league, this takes you to the super best league.
Yes. So let me bring in the guests now. M. Annadurai is former director of ISRO. We also have Dr. G. Madhavan Nair, former ISRO chief. Jonathan Levy is space commentator. He joins me from London. And we have Pallav Bagla here in the studio. I'm going to begin with you, Dr. Nair. One view is that moon isn't the destination. It's a springboard. Because all the information and exploration gathered would set the bar higher.
It's a remarkable achievement as far as the Indian space program is concerned. And we have, of course, collected a lot of data from the Chandrayaan 1 and Chandrayaan 2 about the surface features, mineral content, and so on. But now there's an opportunity to validate those information and look for the exotic minerals and helium-3, water, and so on. So this not only will give an idea about the resources there, but also it will give an idea about the ambience which exists on the lunar surface, especially near the South Pole. South Pole is attractive from many points of view that we can, if at all we are thinking of colonizing, water is available only in the region. And again, for the robotic exploration or launching to other planets, if you want to have the rockets to take off from there, the water can be split into hydrogen and oxygen and can be used as fuel and so on.
Hmm.
So it's a very important event. And India can be proud that we are the first to land a spacecraft on the southern region of the moon. Certainly this is going to not only a technological feat, but also going to bring in lot of scientific information about the origin of the moon and so on.
Yes. We also have Mr. Annadurai, known as the Moon Man of India, who served as the program director of Chandrayaan 1. Mr. Annadurai, from taking baby steps in space exploration in the 80s to the giant historic leap, many say that you have shown the path for what India has achieved. What, according to you, is next for India's space mission?
Yeah, one thing is, this series of Chandrayaan 1, that means 2 came, and 3 also has been accomplished. So the number of 3, 4, 5 may continue for Chandrayaan, that mission to the moon for exploration is concerned. But each one of the numbers will be logical extension of the previous one. The first one is predominantly an orbital mission, lunar polar orbit that's there, and it has a modest impact probe. Subsequently, Chandrayaan 2 had a logical extension wherein supposed to have a lander, softly landing and have a rover, and it has a setback at the last minute of that. That means to carry forward the unfulfilled target of Chandrayaan 2. Chandrayaan 3 has taken over and it has shown and it has fulfilled that as the target. And today we have the very softly landed, especially near the solar pole, polar region, south solar pole, south polar region. And and along with the Pragyan also moving out, and definitely that has shown softly we can land in unexplored terrain and do in-situ analysis and paving a way for the subsequent missions, probably maybe sample return and things like that keep going for lunar exploration. Parallelly, whatever the courage it has given, the confidence it has given from Chandrayaan lunar mission, yes, I think we had already our modest presence. It happened in a Mangalyaan around the Mars. Similarly, the Aditya too have a full-fledged science mission for the solar chronography and things like that, and the solar activity point of view. The mission is slated, I think, that in a couple of weeks from now, that mission also will be launched, and all of them almost taking the path in which it is getting the target, be it meets the moon or Mars, or a so-called Lagrangian point in between Sun and Earth. I think the initial paths will be the something similar, the unique paths, whatever ISRO has done. So that is keep going. Beyond that, yes, we have an exposat mission. Things like that also would keep coming for the exploration point of view. But notwithstanding that, not losing the focus on the societal needs, a good amount of reorganization is taken place, and the latest space policy by government also give the thrust, the arms to the private industries to come in a big way to meet both the national as well as the possible international needs in terms of the remote sensing, communication, navigation and meteorological satellites. So that way, I think one side keeping the societal needs being met to the, using the space as the vantage point, another side going further into the exploration. It's a really, really a fairly good way Indian space program is poised, both R&D as well as taking the benefits to the societal needs point.
Yeah, you have made an interesting point with regards to societal needs. We have seen how India's space missions have been about weather predictions, security, natural resources. Do you see this moment as perhaps a turning point in India's position vis-a-vis the world in space dominance? And if I may ask, did you see this coming?
Yeah, it's definitely it's a fascinating science, and basically it is not just a chance. I think it is a calculated steps Indian space program has taken. If you recall, even Chandrayaan 1 itself, we have given an opportunity for the established space organizations to be part and parcel of Chandrayaan 1 mission, where India is taking the lead and giving an opportunity for the others, and such that that's made to the whole Indian space program to the world that time itself, wherein we showed to the world a common wisdom will prevail rather than individual brilliancy. That's how even the previous 70 missions has not seen, would not see the water contents in the moon, but whereas Chandrayaan 1, though it's a first mission, modest mission, unambiguously discovered water on the moon, and thereby making the other nations look at India for Indian space program, start looking, and beyond that, now moon also being looked at in a big way. So that's one portion. Second thing is, yes, India also has taken it forward, and be it SAARC nations, the satellite for SAARC nations, or even as a part of the UNICEF 50, I think every year, the last 3 years, I think just before the COVID it has happened, and afterwards also it's continuing, I think last 3-4 years. Every year, 15 countries who are not spacefaring are brought to India, and they are being given an opportunity to look at what is the Indian space program, and what are the type of infrastructures we have. Beyond that, they have also given a hands-on experience to make the small satellites. Possibly this is something more like a seeding to the non-spacefaring nations, looking at the India's development in which Indian space program is also playing a role, and also making a modest space science and exploration mission with the reasonably good success, with the just a token of the cost going over there. So putting all these things here, I feel out of nearly 45 countries have been trained today, and out of that, at least a handful, 10 plus countries are showing an active interest to come forward, work with India to take their space efforts. And that is the fertile ground, as far as I'm concerned, for the new emerging space in India, for the societal needs point of view, while we are going ahead for the even further exploration. So both exploration as well as the societal needs, definitely the attention is from the countries, one from the developed countries and who are already active players in the space for the exploration mission. Other one, who are ready to come and join with India for their own benefits, for the societal needs. So that way, I see India is taking a very, very calculated move, and it is getting fructified. Now I'm seeing the signals of that to happen, both one side exploration front, another side for the routine, the missions, probably more of a commercial thing.
It is almost being seen as mini Apollo moment that India is experiencing right now.
That is true. And let me bring up for our viewers, Maria, this is a very rare show. You have two of our original moon stars, Dr. M. Annadurai. He was project director for Chandrayaan 1, Chandrayaan 2, and Dr. Madhavan Nair. My God, he is the original hero, and under whom also the human space flight program was really conceived. He is the one who conceived it at that point. Dr. Madhavan Nair, now that India is going ahead with its Gaganyaan program, remember you were the first one to propose that many years ago. We didn't go through with that at that time. Now we are going through it. Does it make you feel proud? First moon, now getting humans into space?
Certainly, I think this moment is, I am filled with full of satisfaction. The dream what we have had in 2005 about the Chandrayaan project finally fructified. Similarly, the manned mission was very much on our agenda, and it is almost in the final stage of approval. But for some reason or other, it was put in a cold storage, and it is the Modi ji who has really dusted it and brought it up. And now it's well on its way, and I'm hopeful that within the next couple of years, we will have our astronaut flying in our GSLV Mark 3 safely to space and back to Earth. And of course, next step, we should be targeting reaching the moon as well. For that, next generation of launch vehicles are required. But again, the foundation for that has been laid. So I'm happy that whatever dreams we had in the early 2000 era is now being pursued by the ISRO, Indian Space Research Organization, in a vigorous manner. And we are able to stand shoulder to shoulder with the space powers globally.
And let me bring in Jonathan as well now. Jonathan, many countries like United States, Russia, Japan have attempted this in the past, but India achieved what all of them perhaps could not with this soft landing of Chandrayaan 3 on the moon, which is largely the South Pole part. Why do you think they failed and we succeeded? And what do you think has changed?
I think India persisted and learned from its failures and putting some very good technology and engineering to achieve this landing and to be able to make sure it got the right spot, a good spot to land in all the new processes it put in. And I think this has impressed certainly the worldwide space community. And this means that India's not only demonstrated its ability to have an independent space program, but that it could be a great partner for space agencies around the world to partner with them in helping them with their future ambitions. And I know India has already signed up to the US NASA Artemis Accords and has been working with the European Space Agency. So this can only put it in a better position going forward.
Do you see this tilting the balance of power in space exploration towards India? Because this feat is coming at a time the Luna 25 spacecraft, which was Russia's first mission in 47 years, crashed into the moon. Would you say that Russia, which was once a powerhouse of space missions, is seemingly failing and India is now rising?
I think India is definitely rising as a space power. It's demonstrated its abilities. It's done a lot over a short period of time. It has great ambitions, which I dare say, going on this sort of outcome, can be very successful going forward. And therefore, it has to be taken seriously, and it has to be seen as a prominent player, one of only four nations to have landed on the moon.
And Jonathan, what is the scientific community's anticipation in terms of what, Vikram will be able to find out? Because this is the dark side of the moon, which is now becoming India's bright spot.
Indeed. And the South Pole is very special. It's the sweet spot, if you like, for the future. It's the place where it's believed there is water ice, and this could be the first place to set up a permanent base on the moon. And the findings over the next 14 days could really help the whole world, the whole scientific community, understand more about the chemical composition and the geology in this part of the moon that could open up an amazing future for humans to go to the moon and have a permanent base there, and potentially that be a stepping stone to learning how to go on to places like Mars and maybe even beyond.
Yes, and given the kind of reaction and euphoria that we saw yesterday, Pallavi, you will also be, you know, sharing your thoughts on that.
I was ecstatic.
You were ecstatic. Mr. Anandurai, do you see this cultivating new generations of scientists, engineers, mathematicians, and perhaps many Anandurais?
I think yes, I think absolutely, no doubt on that. Definitely, I'm seeing yesterday when I look at here, through media, I could connect a nook and corner of India. The school students, the way in which they are coming back. I was told, I think in Apollo era, that's what was happening in the US. I think much bigger scale it's happened yesterday in India. I think it's an unparalleled way. I could see the enthusiasm in which the people were glued to the thing, and they were aware of that. I think I had an opportunity even to interact with some of the students thanks to the technology provided by media like you. And the way in which they're questioning shows how much they were aware. The way in which inquisitions they're having, I think shows that they have the miles to go ahead. So it is not a Milesami, it's miles of Milesami another. So many people, it's a possibility exist across the cross-section of the India, and across the both boys and girls are doing extremely, extremely enthusiastic. So that way I see the science and technology of India is very, very bright. I was told it's a good percentage of Nobel laureates of US are the generations who have seen the Apollo era as the budding students. Now I see a parallel system happening here. So 20, 30, 40 years from now, I think what India is going to be is really, really a power in the East.
Dr. Nair, you know, India's voice will command greater attention after what happened yesterday. What do you think will change at the high table now? And that's a question also to Pallav.
I will answer it after Dr.
Nair. After Dr. Nair.
Well, certainly, I think the planetary exploration is going to be very much in the agenda as far as India is concerned. And Mars is the next destination where we should have a closer look at it. In fact, Moon, we may be able to have a robotic observatory or remote stations and maybe excavate some of the minerals from there. But if at all we are thinking of an alternate habitat for humankind, it is a Mars. So Mars becomes important from that angle. Similarly, Venus, you know, it has been the hottest in the solar system, and the future of how it has turned to be so hot and what was the influence of the sun on the planet, etc., we need to study quite a lot. So that information will help us in looking at the planet Earth and what will happen in its future and what kind of corrective actions we need to take in terms of the climate change and related of course, we are looking at only the carbon dioxide to start with. But at the same time, the effect of the solar radiation is very, very important. From that point of view, the Aditya mission, what we are conceived, is very unique. We are going to have permanent observation from the Lagrangian point of the solar phenomena and simultaneously observe various things which are happening on the Earth. So that will give some handle. And similarly, about the study about the Venus also will throw some light as to the effect of the intense heat from the sun to help us to build environment in the planet Earth as well.
Okay. Well, the final words to you.
Oh, well, India made a very strong geopolitical statement yesterday by soft landing nearer the South Pole. It's not the South Pole, it's nearer the South Pole. And it happened when the Prime Minister was at the BRICS summit. In a couple of weeks, the G20 leaders are going to be in India. I'm sure Prime Minister Modi will not miss the opportunity to showcase ISRO to the G20 and the world. But going forward, we have Dr. Madhavan Nair and Dr. Annadurai here. When they started off the program for India's moon exploration, there was technology denial, there were sanctions. At that time, they conceived, and even during the technology denial era, Dr. Madhavan Nair, with a very large heart, gave American instruments a free ride to the moon, to NASA a free ride. Now, today, India is joining the Artemis Accords and signing it, and we are signing it as equal partners. America also needs India's space technology. India also needs sophisticated technology from America. So, if a permanent, like Dr. Madhavan Nair said, if we need a permanent habitation on the moon and on Mars, the low-cost, high-quality technology will come from India.
Okay.
India is no longer sitting on a stool on the high table. We are sitting on the high table on a high chair. I'm sure Prime Minister Modi will ensure that we get the right place in the Committee of Nations in space technology and nuclear technology.
Thank you.
And Dr. Madhavan Nair laid the foundations along with
Congratulations, Dr. Nair and Mr. Annadurai, to begin with. And thank you so much for your time here, Pallav Bagla, Dr. Nair, Jonathan, and Mr. Annadurai. The launch video, remember, had a whopping views of roughly 25 million on ISRO's official YouTube page. No other scientific experiment till date has captured the public imagination this way. Joining me now are the director and producer of the popular web series Rocket Boys, Abhay Pannu and Nikhil Advani. Thank you so much and congratulations. Abhay, were you surprised with the kind of euphoria that we saw among the school boys and girls who had all gathered to celebrate the landing of Chandrayaan 3?
Not surprised, but elated.
Yeah.
I think it was high time that, you know, we understood the importance of celebrating the true heroes, the true achievements of our country. And I think all of us who made the show for the last 3 years, we were very happy that, such an historic feat was being appreciated. And there was, as you rightly said, euphoria amongst youth, amongst older people. We're talking about Chandrayaan. It's become a dinner table conversation. So it's incredible.
And so
it's
is Rocket Boys. That's a dinner table conversation, a dinner table watch, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, that was the idea, to be able to make a show that people from all age groups, people across all strata can actually watch, enjoy, celebrate, and appreciate. So I think, thank you for saying that. I'm very happy that we were able to make a show that could connect with so many people.
And Nikhil, Rocket Boys, in fact, captures Vikram Sarabhai and ISRO's humble beginnings. How the first launch took place from a small launch pad in Tumba. And from that, we have seen the journey. Share with the viewers your research about this entire journey to what we saw yesterday.
Well, I think, I think that we were very fortunate to be able to bring the Sarabhai family on board and to be able to get Malika Sarabhai and Devanta Sarabhai to open up not only their heart, but every single piece of information that could be used in the show, in the research of the show. I mean, to the extent that to be not only did we get all the writings, the letters, the various private conversations and private diaries that Vikram Sarabhai had written, not only to his family, to Nalini Sarabhai, but also even his thoughts to the people that he was working with. So I think that really, really helped us in a very big way. It set us, of course, there's so much available in the public domain about Vikram Sarabhai, and very rightly, he is the father of space,
yes,
technology in India. But really, the trust and the immense faith that the Sarabhai family showed on Abhay and us, Siddharth Roy Kapoor, all of us, we couldn't have made it without that. We couldn't have really made the show without their trust and faith.
Yes, and yeah. You have captured the challenges that Vikram Sarabhai faced during the initial days. The huge task to convince the government that there is a need for a space program.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think that's a very big part of season two, you know, where,
yes,
we are just coming out of independence, and why do we need to go to space? I mean, we have famine in India, we have poverty in India, we don't, what is the need for going to space? You know? And I'm so glad that today that question has been answered, right? Because it's a huge amount of pride. It sets forth, I mean, Vikram Sarabhai is somebody who had predicted mobile telephones, he had predicted television, he had predicted what we are doing, which is we are talking to you over a satellite. Right, without what he chose to constantly tell a group of people who never understood what he was trying to do, we would not be able to have this conversation right now. So I think he was not only a Renaissance man, he was a visionary. He had a lot of people that he had to convince, and actually speaking, went about convincing them with tenacity, with resilience. He was quite stubborn from what people have told us. But very driven by the fact that he realized that people, that the government at that time also had a point of view. They also had a focus and a need to do what they were saying they needed to do, but he kept at it. So I think that, I think today the fact that we've called the lander Vikram is a very big,
yes,
big moment of pride for,
yes,
for his
that brings me to my next question, you know. Building the character a bear such as Vikram Sarabhai, on whom the lander is named, which is, yeah, on the moon and is capturing the details, and he set up ISRO, which has taken,
right,
India to the moon. Idea is of ordinary men and women who have done such an extraordinary work, and this is about representing that Team India. And when we were listening to the project director, the deputy director yesterday, it was about showcasing that these were men and women behind making of the machine. They were involved in the making. It was not just about, you know, giving the idea. It was about execution as well.
Right. And so, yeah, I think it's absolutely right to have the foresight. I was just listening to the gentleman who was speaking before us, and they said that India happens to be the first country, correct me,
yes,
if I'm wrong, who have managed to do a soft landing on the South Pole of,
that's right,
moon, on the dark side. Hmm. And, I mean, there was a gentleman who's not from India. He said that this is going to open up avenues for all other countries to start research for moon inhabitation, everything. That's something that people, bigger economies, people have, who have been doing this for far longer than we have, are now going to take help from. Our research, our rover, our lander. I think that was what Vikram Sarabhai was all about. He realized that, you know, for a country which is just newly independent, we will have to break barriers and do something that the other countries aren't doing. The fact that we were able to send this rocket, Chandrayaan 3, in a budget which is less than the budget of the movie Interstellar.
That's,
we were,
right,
able to send Mangalyaan, do Mangalyaan rocket, the mission, less than the budget of a movie Gravity. Pardon me if I'm only giving movie analogies, but I mean, that's what we hear all around us. But the fact that he chose to be very smart about it, to have the foresight, to have the vision that we will have to do this smartly, otherwise there's no way. So that is something that, you know, I think Vikram Sarabhai doesn't get enough credit for.
Hmm.
To be able to build a system, to build an organization that will, you know, do things, the things that haven't been done by other bigger economies, and do it at 1/10 the cost. So
yes,
I think that is where the true victory of Vikram,
yes,
Sarabhai.
It is being seen as a miracle as well, the low-cost miracle as it is being called. Thank you so much for your time, Abhay and Nikhil. We look forward to season three perhaps now. And we are slipping into a short break. Coming up next would be details of the BRICS summit, which is finally expanding. is finally expanding. This was announced today on the final day of the summit in South Africa. It has invited 6 countries to be its full-time member. India welcomed the move, saying it's also a message to other institutions to change with the times. Is BRICS emerging as the voice of the global south? And is India the real driver? I'm going to take that question to the panelists. But before that, some piece of breaking news that has just come in, that Prime Minister Narendra Modi and China's Xi Jinping met on the BRICS sidelines. In fact, Foreign Secretary has said that Prime Minister and Xi have agreed on de-escalation of the ongoing border talks. A new starting Let's point listen in. For BRICS
cooperation. In a conversation with President Xi Jinping of China, Prime Minister highlighted India's concerns on the unresolved issues along the LAC in the western sector of the India-China border areas. Prime Minister underlined that the maintenance of peace and tranquility in the border areas and observing and respecting the LAC are essential for the normalization of the India-China relationship. In this regard, the two leaders agreed to direct their relevant officials to intensify efforts at expeditious disengagement and de-escalation.
And I'm going to go straight to Johannesburg, where Thuso Khumalo is joining us live. Thuso, what are the big takeaways? I mean, how are the papers and the media in South Africa reporting about the BRICS summit?
Descriptions of this year's BRICS summit has been described by a lot of people as a success and a groundbreaking meeting. You'd know that issues that have been agreed here, especially the expansion of BRICS, it has been welcome. You speak to foreign media, to local media, you speak to analysts, they are saying BRICS has charted new ways that have not been charted by other institutions that have been there, because in that group of 6, there are African countries, there are countries from the south, and so people are saying it is a time that all other groupings across the world learn from the BRICS. And also the issue of the BRICS currency, which President Ramaphosa, when he addressed the meeting and other leaders of the BRICS, they said they have tasked their ministers of finance and their central bank governors to go and look into their issues, into that issue, to see how local currencies can be used and what kind of financial systems can be put in place so that trade becomes easy within BRICS. The other issue that was agreed and given further to ministers to go and look at is the issue of those countries who wanted to join BRICS. They are going to look into that, but meanwhile, they'll work as friends of BRICS and cooperate fully with the institution.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. Let me bring in my guests now. Navdeep Singh Suri is former High Commissioner of India to Australia. Vikramjeet Singh is Member of Parliament of Rajya Sabha, former Council of the Republic of South Africa in India. We also have Professor Harsh Pant, Vice President at Observer Research Foundation. I'm going to begin with you, Ambassador Suri. The Prime Minister announced induction of Argentina, Egypt, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Ethiopia, and UAE into this BRICS bloc. What do you make of it? Is this an attempt to strengthen bilateral ties or democratize these grouping, or perhaps offer a template to the world to make world institutions or groupings more inclusive, with certainly an eye on the UNSC, which Prime Minister Narendra Modi has been talking about for a long time?
I think the Prime Minister certainly dropped a hint that there was a message in this to UNSC for reform. But the demand for expansion of BRICS had been around for quite some time. It's been the subject of intense negotiation and discussion at the official level, at the ministerial level. I think the fact that several of our friends were keen to join the grouping meant that we had to go along with their request. I'm happy that coincidentally, two of the countries where I served as ambassador, which are Egypt and UAE, are amongst the 6 that have been included into the expanded BRICS. We have exceptionally close ties with them, and I think our concern was that if you're going to expand BRICS, it shouldn't bring in countries that accentuate the tilt towards China, as it is, this is a forum that China tries to dominate. It isn't always able to, because BRICS charter follows a consensus-driven process. So if everybody agrees, only then decisions can be taken. But I think our concern was that this shouldn't become another way to pack the BRICS forum with friends of China. The fact that we've got several friends of India, very staunch friends of India in the expanded BRICS grouping, is a matter of comfort for us.
And, you know, Vikramjeet, India in the past has played host to African nations and has offered collaboration across a wide range of issues. Is this a concerted attempt to check China's debt trap diplomacy and emerge as an alternate power center, one would say, who is trying to or perhaps willing to deal with these resource-rich African nations as equals?
Yes, Maria, you're so right. I think the expansion of BRICS from five, like Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, including these six more countries from Africa, Ethiopia, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and especially, you know, Iran. So I agree that definitely India, they are Indian friends, and it is a very broad-based, a balanced approach. For example, you see the Iran has been also included in the BRICS, and UAE, United Arab Emirates, as the economic development. And it will definitely check, to answer your question, the China's growing influence in the African countries where the BRICS nations will be now engaged for the food security, for the more arable land, and the BRICS Development Bank, which is new National Development Bank, it has to play a proactive role. But just a word of caution, Mariaji, I think the earlier BRICS was very large economies and high potential growth, but now the 11 countries are less cohesive. Some are on crisis, some are thriving. So there is a signal of expansion, but I don't think it will be restricted to trade. But one appreciable thing which India have been able to bring along is that all the BRICS leaders have expressed concerns about ongoing conflicts. And I was very satisfied with the joint statement addressing and even flagging the concerns of Ukraine crisis, because of course we should not forget Russia is a part, although Mr. Putin was not there, but he is appreciated. But the BRICS adopted a resolution that there is a need for mediation for Ukraine crisis. Also, they have flagged Iranian nuclear deal, because we all know Iran is under U.S. sanctions. So I think this is a new powerful group emerging, not only for trade, but it will have definitely a political connotations, okay, and it will strengthen multilateralism, United Nations, General Assembly, United Nations, Security Council.
Okay. Professor Pant, you know, we have often spoken of foreign policy in terms of doctrine. But Prime Minister Narendra Modi clearly has stayed away from all these labels, and he has insisted on a multipolar world which prioritizes India's self-interest ahead of others. We saw that during negotiations involving Russia and Ukraine. How do you see this departure from established norms, and what could be the likely implications for India in the short and medium term?
Maria, I'm much as I'm optimistic I look at the expansion of BRICS as a relatively good thing, I'm also a bit concerned about where BRICS is going. I think the earlier speaker pointed out the lack of cohesion. The lack of cohesion was equally evident within five members, and now that lack of cohesion gets multiplied by a factor of six. Because now you have six countries, entering this platform, which will make this a pretty unwieldy platform, if I may say so. And also the question about what is the end game here, it's not entirely evident to me. So while I think, as Ambassador Suri pointed out, India has been able to moderate the plans of China in terms of expansion. And while we have very good friends that are entering BRICS, I think a note of caution here that BRICS emerging from a largely geoeconomic to a geopolitical platform may cause some problems for India in the long term. But as you said, in terms of how India envisions its role today, it wants to be part of multiple groupings where it is at the decision-making level. And I think a sense of pragmatism dictates that we continue to engage with BRICS as a platform, which is quite huge and quite dominant in various ways. And if you look at the numbers of global economy or population-wise, but I think the larger issue which will confront India, which India will have to tackle very carefully, is where is this going? And what are the plans here for bringing new members? Because we are told that this is just the first tranche of countries coming into BRICS. There'll be many more rounds of expansion perhaps being planned. Now, India is one of the primary demands that India had made was that we be clear about the technicalities of expansion. We need to have clear parameters as to which countries are coming in and on what grounds. I think we don't know yet what consensus was reached and why certain countries have been privileged. The first round of expansion is good news for India, but whether this good news will continue, that remains to be seen. So I think the expansion itself, while it is good news at the moment, I don't know whether it will remain a good news for India in the long term. Yes. And whether the shape of BRICS will change over a period, and whether the politics is going to impinge more than the economics.
Okay. Ambassador Suri, the BRICS Africa outreach and BRICS plus dialogue, these are very fascinating terms which has been used by the Prime Minister. Dissect this for our viewers. Is India now playing for the big stakes?
I think what the South Africans did quite smartly was use their presidency of BRICS to put a focus on Africa and invite all of the African heads of state and government to Johannesburg. For us, it was an opportunity to engage with a very large group of leaders from across the African continent. And I think what Prime Minister Modi was able to do in his address to them was tell them that India is trying to be the voice of Africa, the voice of the Global South during its presidency of G20. He was able to underline all of the various things that we are doing in Africa, with Africa, as partners of Africa, whether it is scholarships or power projects or IT centers of excellence or technology parks or all of that. So he was able to use that platform to make really a major statement to the African leaders. And I think that's a big positive for us, because in any case, we have been planning to host the next India-Africa Forum Summit, which is due, whether it gets held in India or in an African country. But this was a good opportunity for India to address the African leaders who had been invited by South Africa, let's understand.
And interestingly, the Prime Minister spoke about the shared history and legacies as well. Professor Pant, are you seeing these global groupings perhaps an attempt to undo the West's hegemony and shift the power balance to East?
Well, I would say to a certain extent, certainly BRICS was designed to be a platform which could raise the voice of the emerging economic powers when they were demanding a greater share in global decision-making, and particularly in the economic and finance realm. And there, I think, when it all started, it was a project where India was partnering with like-minded countries of BRICS to put that demand firmly on the global agenda. And BRICS have been successful in doing that. BRICS has been a very potent voice for that restructuring and reordering. So I think there is no doubt that BRICS has played a very important role in developing that consciousness in the West that something needs to be done. Where I think India differs from, say, China or Russia is in making BRICS a patently anti-Western platform, and that I think it is not in India's interest. India would not like that to happen. So certainly the demands that India has made with regard to expansion relate to that. But overall, I think BRICS as a platform for a new voice that demands a move away from Western hegemony finance and trade, finance and economics, as well as we were hearing from your correspondent in Johannesburg, this idea of de-dollarization that has been growing up is also again a reflection of this trend that the hegemony of the dollar, US dollar, should be challenged in some ways by those who are emerging in the global economic hierarchy. So I think broadly that agenda has been put forth in a very effective manner by BRICS. How that gets operationalized in the coming years, that will be also a challenge for BRICS. But I think that issue firmly is now embedded in global consciousness, and in particular in the Western consciousness, which I think is very important if this conversation is to move forward in a productive manner.
Okay. My last question is to Vikramjeet. Vikramjeet, how do you see this playing out, particularly in the context of G20 and India's presidency?
Because, ma'am, I was very pleased to read that India have been able to act as put a balancing act together. Our friends, United Arab Emirates, countries like Egypt, Saudi have been there, Iran also. Now they have emphasized on the importance of G20 in the BRICS summit declaration. And they have said that the multilateral forum should strive way for international cooperation and financial stability. And India is in a very pivotal position hosting G20 this year and next year, having the BRICS as a host of BRICS countries, and number of things, and it has coincided with our Chandrayaan landing at Moon, and Prime Minister have emphasized Space Research Consortium, and these things to be used for education, skill development, lives and livelihoods, reaching our education to rural areas, apart from climate change, and agriculture is most important, which I chair the BRICS Agri Forum. We have been engaged for seed development bank, for food security, and increasing arable land. And we have to learn from various BRICS countries' experience, like Zero Hunger Project of Brazil, biofuels, which is the need of the hour. So on a whole, I think it will unfold to a very, very, very powerful group. And let's hope it strengthens multilateralism and not necessarily the anti-Western, but it will definitely strengthen South-South cooperation.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Navdeep Singh Suri, Vikramjeet Singh, and Professor Pant.